Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Lindbergh.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Coming up after the break, we'll talk a little Mizzou as their new head football coach was introduced today, plus more from San Diego and Major League Baseball's winter meetings. That's next on Sports Open Line. Chris Raby, Mike Claiborne with you back in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Lindbergh.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Welcome back to Sports Open Line on a Tuesday night. Chris Raby and Mike Claiborne with you. We're in San Diego at Major League Baseball's winter meetings. Our coverage brought to you by Goodwill. Donate a car for four free field box tickets. And do want to pivot for a moment and talk some Mizzou. We talked about it in our last hour. But Eliah Drinkwitz introduced as the new head coach of the Missouri football program today. And Claibs, just a odd coaching search, a strange last couple of weeks. How would you describe the time from Barry Odom's firing to the news breaking? I guess you were here as I was headed out here on Sunday that this was the new head coach.
I found it a little confounding. You had to know at some point, well before you fired Barry Odom, that this was going to happen. So this wasn't like a shock where Barry Odom left you. You were deciding this. And it just seemed like there was a...
It might have had it decided for a little bit.
I agree. And so for you to be so scrambled, knowing that there were other teams that were going to be looking for coaches as well, and the curators get in the mix and say, well, you know, this isn't the kind of list we were hoping for. At least that's what's been reported. So you go out and you find a coach who probably wasn't on very many radars for the SEC. Now, that doesn't mean he can't coach in another conference, and that doesn't mean he can't coach in this conference. But I just felt like the whole thing was rushed for the wrong reasons. Maybe because teams were turning you down, or school coaches were turning you down sooner than you thought. You weren't getting return calls maybe from some. And so, therefore, you went to plan B, or in this case, plan C, a lot quicker than you thought you would. I just thought it didn't seem like there was enough real organization here with respect to who the legitimate candidates were. And maybe this is what all you were left with. I don't know. It just seemed like it happened really quickly. And maybe the fact that we don't know a lot about this gentleman who's going to be coaching Missouri. I know everybody, well, he's 12-1, you know. Yeah, but again, he won with somebody else's players. Somebody made a point to me last night that they
was
did
it
have
Reggie
some
Jackson?
It wasn't Reggie, no. That there were some good offenses at North Carolina State, and that's great. I remind everybody that's the ACC and it's North Carolina State, okay? North Carolina State's never been known for having great football programs. They're in the ACC for basketball, and they haven't been that good in basketball either. So I think that to use that as a barometer on how good Coach Drinkwitz is probably is a little skewed, but I guess that's better than him not having – let's put it this way. Probably a better resume than Derek Dooley, the offensive coordinator, formerly of Missouri.
Yeah, and how about when he was hired by Tennessee? People were like, what in the world?
Right. I mean, he was Vince's kid, and they thought that was going to – well, Vince wasn't coaching him. His kid was. And then when he went to Dallas, it was suggested that he look for another job when he was a receivers coach at Dallas.
I'm wondering, and I thought originally, as you alluded to, when the decision was made to fire Odom and to buy him out, and they came up with the money, it seemed fairly painlessly. I thought, okay, if there's the green light from the boosters and from the big money boosters, that must mean that Jim Stirk has something up his sleeve and the finances to go and make a hire that can take advantage of the window right now. What I mean by that is not just the new facilities and what you have to recruit with, but who knows how long the SEC East is going to remain as bad as it's been the last couple years. You know, Florida seems to be on the rise. Georgia is always Georgia. Tennessee even showed flashes this year of being a really good team, not just a competent team, but a good team under Jeremy Pruitt. I don't know if you can just assume that the SEC East will be as down as it's been the last couple of seasons moving forward.
Oh, I don't think it will be. I think that
you've got to take advantage
proven.
Of this window,
yeah,
right?
No, I agree. I think it's already been proven with the emergence of Tennessee. Kentucky's had a pretty solid program, and kudos to them with them losing as many quarterbacks as they did,
and they still find themselves.
Yeah. So I mean, it
that
says
was,
a
that
lot.
That guy was unbelievable.
Now,
that
here's the other thing. You know, Missouri thinks this is big stuff. You know, well, we're going to spend $4 million on this football coach. You know, there are 30 other guys in Division I football that are making at least $4 million. And guess where most of those guys are at, what conference they're in? They're in the SEC. So for somebody to think they're making this big step to bring this guy into the fold, you better think again. Because $4 million is basically the floor of the SEC right now.
All right, we'll hear from the athletic director, Jim Sterk, in a moment. But here is the new head coach with the media, Elijah Drinkwitz.
It's humbling to know that the entire state is putting their hope in our football program and into my vision. And it's a challenge that we're willing to take on, and we're going to accept, and we're going to get it done.
What a year you had at App State. Mm-hmm. How do you take that here to Missouri and the SEC?
Well, I don't know exactly. You know, we had an incredible football team with guys who were united on the same mission. And that's where it starts, and that's what we've got to do here is we've got to get our locker room, our coaches, all of our support staff and organization on the same mission. And the quicker we can do that, the quicker we can get moving.
Eli, what's the challenge in going to a locker room last night in front of a bunch of young men who don't know you and trying to sell yourself to them and show them why you're the right guy?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me is I don't sell myself. I just become genuine in who I am and lay the vision down. And the thing I told them was, you didn't choose me. I chose you. I chose to be here. And I'm going to work 365 days a year to build your trust and respect and earn your trust and respect. And that's what we're going to try to do. And it started last night. And it doesn't happen overnight. It's going to be investment over time. And that's what we got to do.
You mentioned the challenges of trying to, you know, keep a class together before the early period here. You kind of went through a similar thing last season, taking over a head coaching spot around this time of year. What kind of did you take away from that? How can you attack this next week or so?
Well, the good thing is I'm familiar with how this process is going to work, and I made mistakes last year that I'm learning from, and so I don't fall into those same traps again. And so I think experience is the best teacher, and I've got experience now, so that'll be a good thing.
What did you kind of learn from last year in terms of having or the last year where you have to actually focus on the other side of the ball, being your offensive guy?
Yeah, biggest thing I learned was coffee is your friend, and you got to be careful about how much coffee you consume late at night, because then you don't get to go to sleep in time. And so that was probably the biggest thing. It all takes time, and when you're the head football coach, it all ends up at your doorstep and at your desk, and so you got to be willing to, you know, there's a lot of tasks. You got to take it one bite at a time and work to achieve it, and understand it takes what it takes to be successful. It costs what it costs, and this is an awesome opportunity, and the investment by this university has been made into our program, and so it costs what it costs to get the job done. We're going to get it done.
You know, how much can you speak to just the difference between today and a year ago? How different are you from having been a head coach this last year?
I've only got about 8 more haircuts left before I'm completely bald. And so that's one difference. You know, like I said, experience is the best teacher, right? And so I've got a year of experience of learning a roster, putting together a staff, managing people on a day-to-day basis, understanding how the organizational structure works, how we tie in academics to our everyday life, how do we tie in the student-athlete's daily experience, whether it's through athletic training, through equipment, through physical training, therapy, and academics. So I've got a handle on all that. By no means do I have the book written. We're learning every single day, and I look forward to learning what's going to work best here at Mizzou, because what worked best at the last place may not work exactly the same way. And so I've got to be open-minded enough to work what works best for us here, because now it's us at Mizzou.
And how much better prepared do you feel like I mean, if you'd been offered this job a year ago, how different would your currency be for this?
I probably wouldn't have got the same contract value. I'd probably be a little bit overwhelmed right now.
Yeah.
And right now I just don't feel that way. I feel comfortable and calm and I'd say I feel steady. And that's kind of where I'm at.
Eli, along the same lines, have you allowed yourself to take some kind of step back on a big picture view of what 10 years ago you mentioned, the seventh grade coach, high school assistant, to where you are now? And
yeah,
really a fast ascent in this business?
No, I haven't. I know this, the minds of men plan the ways the Lord directs their steps. And that's something that my family and I believe in, and just trust that the Lord moves and causes direction in our life, and that's what we're doing. And so I don't, you know, there'll be at some point when I'll look back and do that, but I really am the type of person that just tackles one challenge at a time, and I really don't have time to think about what happened yesterday. I got four girls and a football program to run, so don't have a lot of time to sit back and look at the fire.
Your lovely bride said that your recruiting skills were evident the way you recruited her to get her to say yes.
Yeah.
Could you elaborate on that a little?
Well, I wasn't her first choice. I mean, let's just put it out there plain and simple. And I had to just keep, I'm an underachiever, and so I just kept working. You know, I guess that's it.
You first met with them Saturday night. Obviously, you had a game to play. But can you take us – when did you know this was the job you wanted? Can you take us through however long a period of time that was?
Well, look, when the job opened, there was a lot of intrigue for me. I have family that lives close. I have a brother that lives in the state. And so, you know, there was a natural like, okay, that's the SEC. That's an intriguing job. Didn't hear, you know, from anybody, so focused on the task at hand. And then on Saturday, you know, knew that there was going to be some interest. Tried to focus on winning the game, won the game, celebrated, went to my locker and said, we'd like to meet with you. And then another message that said, we will be in Wilkesboro at this time. And so, you know, had my representation get back to them and say, yeah, I'd love to meet, and worked through the proper channels of Appalachian State, got permission from them, and then it was a whirlwind. It was a whirlwind.
I mean, when did it, was it Sunday afternoon that I know it wasn't official until this morning, but that, hey, we kind of agreed on this? Or when you felt comfortable you were taking the job?
I felt comfortable I was taking the job when they voted on me at the Board of Trustees or Curators this morning. Yeah, so, I mean, I had a peace in my spirit that this was probably going to be the right situation for us, in a piece that this was the right place for us. Whenever, you know, all the people started breaking the story, I guess they were at my house. I don't know. Sometime around Sunday, I think, you know, it was like, okay, this is probably what's going to end up happening. But, you know, this day and age, you never know until everything's done. So
I don't know how. Go
ahead. No, go ahead.
I don't know how it works when you're leaving a place, but obviously Doug Gillen spent some time here. Mm-hmm. You know, did you talk to him at all about Missouri?
Absolutely. Doug and I have a great relationship. There's an honest and trust between the both of us. And how you leave a place is just as important as how you walk into a place. And Appalachian State was great to me. They took a chance on me. Doug was unbelievable for us and for me personally and professionally. And we had several conversations about this opportunity and what the opportunity could be. And he gave me my best, and I gave him my best, and I gave that place my best for as long as I was there. And again, I just a lot of thanks and gratitude to those players on that football team, because without them, I don't have this opportunity. And so I'm thankful to them.
You talk about building the trust with the players, but I would imagine you've got to build some trust with the fan base too. There's had about 55,000 people here by the end of the season. How do you go about building that trust with a fan base?
Well, one, they have to be excited about the message that we're spreading, and two, we have to put a product on the field that makes them excited to come represent the University of Missouri, and the product that says, I want to wear Mizzou football gear because they're playing in the right way. And so that's the task at hand, and we got to get it done.
How about your actual playing career? You played grade school. Tell me what you did football-wise, athletically.
I played football all the way through the completion of my high school senior season. I had a torn labrum coming out of high school, had surgery, and went to Arkansas Tech. Had the opportunity. I mean, I could have walked on at Arkansas Tech, but at that point, you cannot take you can't have academic scholarships and walk on and play football. And so I had to choose at that point. And at that point, I wanted to be a head high school football coach, and graduated in 3.5 years with the mindset of trying to get a head coaching job in high school. And like I said earlier, the mind's a man playing the ways, the Lord directs your steps, and now I'm the head coach at the University of Missouri.
When did you have the dream of high school wasn't enough, you wanted to get into college coaching?
I never really had the dream that I wanted to be a college coach. It was in 2010, Coach Malzahn offered me an opportunity to be a quality control at Auburn, and he came and spoke to my wife and I, and at that point my daughter was 2 months old, and we had to make a decision on whether or not we wanted to chase this dream of being a college football coach, and we chose to chase it and sold our house and moved into an apartment, and there you go.
Was that a paid position at Auburn?
Yeah, it was it was $15,000 a year, no benefits.
That's a real leap of faith.
Yeah, sell your house. We were both teachers, and sold our house, moved into an apartment, and said, it's in God's hands.
You mentioned meeting Gary Pinkel in 2009. Mm-hmm. What were kind of some of the specific things that you remember him saying that you kind of took away or have stuck with you?
Well, I actually still have. Coach Pinkel had a family covenant that his program operated on. They also had a no-excuses policy that he operated on. And there were things, the way he ran a program that I watched and was excited about, the way he interacted with people, had a lot of coaches stay for a long time with him, which is the type of leader that I want to be, somebody that people want to be around. So those are the things that hit home with me.
The new head coach, again, headed to Mizzou, and we'll wait for the tales of his staff, see if he hits the ground running recruiting, and also the implications of, you know, Mizzou not playing in a bowl this year, what all of that means. Moving forward, here is, though, the athletic director, Jim Sterk, after today's news conference with Tom Ackerman.
The director of athletics at the University of Missouri, Jim Sterk, after a big moment here at the school as Eli Drinkwitz is named the head coach of the University of Missouri, a big press conference today. I'm sure that a lot went into this.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it takes an AD to have a successful search, needs the support of the board of curators, your president of the system, and the chancellor, and all those folks put time and energy into the search, and we're excited about the result.
What do you like about Eli Drinkwitz?
What's there not to like? As a head coach, he's 12-1, beat South Carolina, North Carolina, won those battles, and then won the Sun Belt Conference Championship the other day. I spoke to him right afterwards. Obviously, he's a passionate guy, does a great job connecting with kids, and everywhere he's been, he's made them better, and I'm excited for him to lead our program.
Was that an exciting time to be able to visit with him one-on-one and experience that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. He's a guy that you connect with. He connects with people. He'll look you in the eye and talk to you, and he's special.
His address to the crowd today, towards the end of his opening address, saying, "We have to restore the pride in the Tiger football program." That's a big message.
Yeah, absolutely. We can't do it alone. It takes everyone in the state, you know, from the governor on down. Even though the governor was willing to concede he can be the second most popular figure in the state if Eli is number one. So I think when you have that kind of commitment from the governor on through all the support of the administration, our fans and donors that support our program, I couldn't be more excited for all of them.
Appreciate the time very much. Congratulations.
All right. Thank you.
All right, Clibs, I guess, you know, final thought is that for better or worse, Jim Sterk now is tied to Eli Drinkwitz. Know that Barry Odom was not his hire. Jim Sterk hired Konzo Martin. That is still yet to be seen. And Mizzou did have a nice win over Temple over the weekend, bouncing back after last week. But this is his guy now, and this is his guy for better or for worse.
Yeah, and you know what? That's okay. I mean, that's what you're hired for.
Want to get your guy?
Yeah, better get your guy because you may go sooner than he does. So you might as well do it your way. You know, I was talking about coaches. Yeah, there are 9 guys in the SEC that are making at least $4 million.
Jeez.
So
how many of them does Jimmy Sexton represent? Sexton might be making $4
Jimmy
million.
Jimmy Sexton's probably making $4
million.
He's
probably making more than some
He's
of them.
Probably making more than some of the other coaches in the conference for sure. But, you know, when you signed up for the SEC, and I know there were some people who were like, well, we're going to the SEC. I don't think anybody understood the implications that came with being part of the SEC when it came to salaries, when it came to facilities, when it came to competition, when it came to recruiting. A far cry than what the Big 12 was offering at that point. And remember, the Big 12 was kind of splintered at that time. And I don't know if they've ever recovered from it, to be honest with you. So going back to your original question, Tennessee's on the move. Kentucky's on the move. Vanderbilt kind of took a step back. South Carolina kind of had a hiccup. Florida, I think, is moving in the right direction. So, I mean, when you look at those schools alone, you have your work cut out for them. And here's the other question for you. Where is Missouri's recruiting base now?
Okay, well, it has to be the state of Missouri, and it has to be St. Louis. You have
but
to
I don't even know if the guys in Missouri are good enough
to
keep this thing afloat.
I know, but you've got to seal the borders so that when there is
that's
one
true.
Of,
yeah.
So that when there is an Ezekiel Elliott or when there is one of those players, and again, he's maybe a unique case because not everyone can go to Ohio State, but Jeremy Maclin could have gone a lot of places. He wanted to come play at Mizzou. You need to make guys feel like that in St. Louis and to some extent Kansas City, but you need to seal the borders, Clay, so when there is that guy, he's going to Mizzou, or you at least have a great shot.
No, I agree. You got to be in the conversation. You got to be in the living room. And that's something I think Missouri is starting to get away from, was starting to get away from, not being able to get the premier player.
Yeah.
Here's the other thing you have to do if you're at Missouri. You have to go find the best offensive lineman.
Yes.
You better go find the best wide receiver you can find. And then thirdly,
the best athlete. The lineman.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the name of the game. Athletes in the SEC. It's an athlete who lined up at quarterback for Kentucky and beat Missouri. He's just a damn good athlete.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt.
All right, we'll take a break, come back, and when we do, Mike Ferentz will give us his perspective, a national take on the winter meetings, the Cardinals in the National League Central. Chris Rabie and Mike Claiborne with you. We are in San Diego at Major League Baseball's winter meetings.
By the way, when we come back with Mike Ferentz, we didn't talk to him about the Didi Gregorius signing by Philadelphia. And I think you're going to really start to see this thing start to move now. That was the one thing we didn't talk to him about, so when you hear it, you'll wonder why. We'll talk about that certainly during the show as well, though.
Yeah, that and more coming up as we are in San Diego. Back in a moment on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line.
Munganass pre-owned on South Limburg.
On America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Mike Ferentz of the Arizona Diamondbacks and also MLB Network Radio on Sirius joins us in San Diego at Major League Baseball's winter meetings. What's going on, man? How are things down on the first floor at the Sirius XM setup?
Well, most recently there was the big crowd for Scott Boras out in front of it, which
circus.
Was that's always a circus.
It is.
Then Scott always has some stragglers when he comes on set, but for the most part, it's been pretty quiet today, which is standard, I would say. I mean, the fact that we had a Strasburg deal yesterday is pretty unusual for the first day of the winter meeting.
So I was going to say, Boras usually hasn't had one of his guys signed by now.
Well, they had,
big guys.
They had. I heard that they had all of their meetings, the initial meetings with teams done before the start of December, basically by Thanksgiving. So a little bit different feel of the market than the last couple of years. But this is operating much more like, and you guys have been to a bunch of these, the standard winter meetings, right? Get one deal on the first day. There's a little bit of quiet Monday.
Yeah.
Start quiet on Tuesday. And then what happens is we get to late afternoon. There starts to be some movement. And then there'll be something, I think, that breaks the dam late tonight or early tomorrow morning, gets things going. I think Cole probably gets done before we leave on Thursday. It might be Thursday before it's done, but I think that's going to end up happening. But other than that, I think that there's going to be a trade or there's going to be a free agent signing that starts to move some of the next elements of the market.
You know, that's interesting, and you put it in that light because I think everybody's rubbing their hands in anticipation. But I think the trade interest – or really is going to turn this thing on because I think there are a lot of players that aren't available via free agency that teams would have an interest in, and I think the Cardinals would fall in that category, especially when it comes to a left-handed bat.
Yeah.
And I think there are more teams looking to do deals as long as they don't have to give up too many prospects because everybody covets their own prospects now more than they used to.
I think there are teams that are willing to give up prospects if you're going to get multiple years of control of a player. And I think they're willing to give them up for players that can have an impact. I mean, I think it all depends on – it's all relative in terms to, you know, market size and where teams are in the winning cycle and all of that as to when it happens. I mean, from the Cardinals' standpoint, you're right. I mean, they're probably the best bet to go on the trade market for a left-handed bat unless
you got one
really
in Arizona
like
we
Corey
could use.
Dickerson. Well, I mean, David Peralta.
Former Cardinal.
I don't get the sense that it's a fit necessarily, although they've done deals before. I don't think that David is necessarily what the Cardinals are looking for. I think they're looking for more impact. So then finding a left-handed hitter who's that. I mean, if you want to go down that road for the Cardinals, I mean, let's think about this just from a standpoint of being comparative. If you want to go down that road for a left-handed hitting corner outfield bat, it's probably a better route to go with, say, Corey Dickerson in free agency or Cole Calhoun, although I think he's more likely to stay west, and something like that where all it costs you is money and not prospects, right?
So that makes more sense. And you can do short-term, too.
Right. But I also think that that's part of the market, and this is something I was talking to a couple people about today, that's the part of the market that's going to move slowly is the outfielders. And here's the reason why. All of those guys, so we just mentioned the two left-handed hitters that are in there, but it's also Nicholas Castellanos, Marcelo Zuna, Yasiel Puig. You can rank them however you want in terms of preference, but they're basically all solid, everyday major league players.
Guy.
They're
yeah.
not stars.
Right.
And because there's so many players that are in that same mold, in that same part of free agency, I think that's the market that ends up moving really slowly because I think none of those guys have the impact that somebody wants. You know, if the Cardinals were able to swing a deal where they could trade for somebody like, say, a Charlie Blackman, like that would have
that's
a much greater
deal.
Well, that's a greater impact, right?
That's one of the ones you say, uh-oh, they're for real now.
Right.
Yeah, but those other guys aren't uh-oh players.
Mitch Haniger with probably not a fit for the Cardinals if they want to get left-handed, but Mitch Haniger would be a name with the Mariners. You know, those kind of players, those are the ones that I think are more likely to move in the outfield market. And Starling Marte is another one with the Pirates. Those are guys that are all-stars or borderline all-stars. And I think what you're going to see is that group begin to move here. And then that second tier of the outfield market will probably start to unravel itself around Christmas and into the new year.
Madison Bumgarner, I know there was some talk last week about maybe the Cardinals having some interest. I think that's a no-brainer. Who wouldn't want to have interest in him? Price might be a little too steep, so give me the tier two of pitchers that maybe you can get for a shorter term.
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think Bumgarner is in tier two, I think. So you're probably looking more at tier three. I would say Dallas Keuchel probably fits into that mix.
I like him.
Especially if you're looking for somebody left-handed in there. He kind of, to me, he stands out kind of alone in that next group. Just the way things look right now with, you know, where the market is headed. Because we've cleared a good amount of the quality starting pitchers off. And that's not to say that there aren't, you know, solid pitchers that are still left on the free agent market. But to me, he would be the next name on that. And then beyond it, I mean, you start getting into names like Rick Porcello, who's a good bounce-back candidate.
Maybe some of the buy-low guys.
Yeah, or like solid major league starters that aren't going to be necessarily break the bank but be, you know, decent. You get guys like Tanner Roark and that kind of guy who's, he's just going to get you some innings.
Wade Miley, maybe?
Wade Miley's another name, especially if you're looking for a lefty.
For a lefty.
Most of his season was really good last year. Kind of faded down the stretch. But so we're starting to get to the point where tier two that you talked about, claims, I mean, or tier three, you're going to start getting into the trade market too, and you're going to start talking about guys like Robbie Ray from the Diamondbacks' name is going to come up, and those are the guys that are going to fit there who might have a year or two of control left, but aren't necessarily going to be the big free
difference
agent
makers.
Signing.
Yeah.
Do you think the asks and some of the asks that we heard about at the deadline last year will impact the trade market this offseason? Because we saw, in a sense, so little movement. Does that have more to do with the 2019 deadline in a vacuum, or do we ever see carryover?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of disagree. I actually think we had a pretty active deadline. There was something like 40 players moved right at the deadline. So, I mean, there was a lot. there wasn't any sizzle really on deadline day until the Greinke trade. But remember, the night before we had the Puig deal, the Puig Bauer deal. Like, that was a big deal.
Yeah, there
was
Stroman a lot before that.
Stroman before early. That, right? So there was. So I don't necessarily think that. I mean, I think it got. There was that feeling of it because there were teams like the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Cardinals that didn't do anything at the deadline, or really didn't make that significant move. And so I think that that's why there's this perception that there wasn't much that went on because the asks were so high or anything. There were plenty of moves that were made.
Is Castellanos to the Cubs, that ended
Castellanos
up being fairly
had a bit, but it had an impact on them, and that they needed an offensive piece that was productive. And it you know, I think certainly his representative is trying to use that to buoy his free agency now. So those teams that sat it out may not have liked the prices, but I don't think that necessarily impacts that. I think a much bigger factor in both the free agent market and on the trade market for teams in general is there's a level of desperation in a number of markets that there hasn't been over the last several years as they come out of rebuilds, and now your feet are starting to be held
produce.
To the fire a little bit. Yeah, it's time to you got to start turning some of this into W's.
And on the flip side of that, you have, I think, the three teams that have been contenders in the National League Central, most recently the Cardinals, Cubs, and the Brewers, all dealing with factors that will impact their ability to add or how aggressively they can add this offseason. You have the Reds, who have made significant improvements. Mm-hmm. How do you see the Central? You've got new managers. All of a sudden, Craig Counsell is the longest tenured manager in the division. How do you view the Central, and what kind of pressure will there be on the Cardinals, Brewers, and Cubs?
Very competitive division, and I think even if there aren't many moves made, I think it's going to still be pretty competitive. I mean, I think the Brewers have clearly set themselves up to do something. I don't think that they would have non-tendered all these guys, the $3 and $4 million players, if they didn't have some sort of plan in place. They have a big need for a third baseman, and it would seem to me, at least on paper, that Josh Donaldson would be the kind of fit that you would be thinking of there. We haven't heard them linked to it at all, but they have the money to be able to spend. They just took $18 million off the books with Grandal being a free agent, and he would fit a need. Plus, they, you know, their highest paid player right now is Ryan Braun, and he comes off the books after next year. So I think Milwaukee, you know, they're poised to do something a little bit bigger, potentially on the offensive side. I think the Cubs have a really tough task in that they have to move a lot of players to free up payroll in order to make their roster better, to add a bunch of different needs. And the Chris Bryant grievance over service time is hanging over that, because that I got a sense today from talking to somebody who's involved in that process that we may not find out about where that ruling falls until spring training, which would completely undercut his value on the market, because we don't know whether or not you're going to have his control until for 2 years or for 1 year. So that makes it much more difficult to deal him. The Cardinals have a little bit more money to spend than Bill DeWitt first made it sound like. You know, certainly John Mozeliak, like I said, that they have the flexibility to be able to add what they need. They have, I think, to me, they have a need for a corner outfield bat, even with Dylan Carlson coming. But this isn't a great market for corner outfielders. So it's, I think, look at those, and the Reds are still going to add offense. I think that's kind of the way you start to stack it up. And I think, you know, no matter how it works, I think you're probably looking at, you know, four teams are going to be separated by six or fewer games once you get to the end of the season.
If the Bryant grievance takes that long, I mean, that's just
– it's not surprising, though, based on the way grievances for collective bargaining go, because you have to weigh a significant amount of case law. You have to undoubtedly ask for extra evidence. There's not, you know, you have to be
sure
you have to be able to work through all of that. I mean, I think it's pretty easy. The way those arbitration panels are is there's a representative from the Players Association, there's a representative from Major League Baseball that are on it, and then there's the independent arbiter, and the independent arbiter is the one who ends up casting the deciding vote almost always. And it's almost always a 2-1 decision. So you have to have a ton of information in order to make that, because you want to make sure that it's in strong legal standing.
I don't think the timeline is surprising, but it certainly puts the Cubs in a precarious position in terms of evaluating this season, long-term plan with Bryant, and then what they could possibly get from him, and how that return would be diminished as you get into the season and as each month ticks by.
Yeah, I mean, I think but I think it also has to open up other possibilities for them to look to deal. I mean, they have other players that as much as the focus has been on Bryant because he's Contreras. 2 years away from free agency, you know, the Contreras move doesn't make any sense to me. He's only owed about $4.5 million. He's one of the best offensive catchers in the National League. And they just hired Craig Driver away from the Phillies, who's got a great reputation for working with catchers and in improving their receiving skills. So I don't see the Contreras thing. The Contreras thing doesn't really save you much money. It might add, you know, fill a need. But
I think it might be a culture issue.
Or I don't think it's a culture issue with Contreras. It doesn't sound like he's got a work ethic problem. So I don't think
he's not. Well, I'm not work ethic, but maybe just his overall.
No, I don't think that's.
Well,
it.
I think okay. because of
I think the, it's. I think it's the. I think they view him as a guy who is an offense first catcher who hasn't improved all that much defensively, but also. If you're going to move him, he's going to be attractive to a number of teams that are going to be able to help you fill a number of needs relatively
That's
cheaply.
Yeah.
Well, that's
and,
to me
and,
the
and
reason
also
with Contreras.
Because of what they have coming up. And yeah, why
yeah Miguel Amaya is a good prospect.
Yeah, Peretta, right. Why he'd be attractive financially as well for other teams. Yeah, maybe that's their best chip.
I think that's he's their best trade chip in that regard, but I don't think he solves enough of their needs. I think it's much more important for them to try and find ways to create more financial flexibility. So you start looking at guys like Quintana. You know, we talked about Bryant. You know, I mean, if you start pricing where the market is on starting pitching, like all of a sudden Yu Darvish at, what, $81 million looks like a relative bargain for a lot of
Especially
places.
The way he pitched
yeah,
the second half of last
he's
year.
He's got a limited no-trade clause, but tell me that he wouldn't, you know, take a reunion with Texas. You know, Texas may lose out on Rendon, and then what are they going to do? Are they going to go down the Donaldson road? I mean, it sounds like the Donaldson market's heating up because Washington's going there too. So, like, there's a lot of different things that you could pivot to in this. But I think that they're in a really tough bind in that they just don't seem to have. They could go to the post with this team right now and be okay, you know, and you know, hope that everybody rebounds and that David Ross is the fresh face and they take full advantage of the talent, but it's going to be tougher to do that. I think they need to move, you know, a significant amount of payroll to be able to fill the needs that they have.
Mike Farron, Diamondbacks Radio and MLB Network Radio on Sirius XM. Appreciate it, man. Always great to see you. Thanks for swinging by.
Great to see you guys in person. It is nice to see you out of your element at
Busch
Stadium.
And we'll see you in St. Louis?
Well, I think so. Yeah, but it should be in St. Louis this year.
All
so
right.
I think that's the tentative plans. Or I will be in.
I'll alert the authorities.
So, yeah, please do. Yeah. Just tell them. See if they can put that warrant on like a 96-hour hold or something.
I know people. Don't worry. We'll get you squared away.
That's what I'm afraid
of. I got you. Man. Don't worry about it.
Thank you, bud. When we come back, we'll wrap things up for day two of Major League Baseball's winter meetings in San Diego. Chris Raby, Klaibs as well. Ben Boyd, our executive producer, Mike Anderson back in St. Louis. And we're back in a moment on KMOX.
We are the voice of Cardinal Nation, America's sports voice, KMOX. Welcome back to the Munganass St. Louis Honda Sports Open Line. Munganass St. Louis Honda on South Limburg. On America's sports voice, KMOX.
That'll do it for us on day two of the winter meetings in San Diego. Chris Raby and Mike Claiborne with you. Again, a big thanks to Goodwill. Our coverage brought to you by Goodwill. Donate a car for 4 free field box tickets, and we will be back with you tomorrow. Excited that our first Cardinals Countdown to Opening Day show presented by Ameren is tomorrow night from 7 to 9 St. Louis time. Looking forward to talking it over with Mike Schilt, John Mozeliak, Ted Simmons, Joe Torre, and more tomorrow night. A big thanks to Derek Gould from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch for joining us tonight. You can see more of our conversation with Derek at KMOX.com, also on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at KMOX Sports. Thanks also to Mike Farron for joining us, Sirius XM, MLB Network Radio, and the Diamondbacks. A big thanks to Ben Boyd, our executive producer, and Mike Anderson back in our Cardinals and KMOX studios. Now for Mike Claiborne, I'm Chris Raby. Day two of the winter meetings in the books. We'll talk to you tomorrow from San Diego on your home for Cardinals Baseball, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.